Okay, well, this is KVRF Sutton and K208BC Palmer. Radio Free Palmer broadcasting on 89.5 on your FM dial, Big Cabbage Radio. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Alex Strawn in here for the first time and out of his office at the Borough. Welcome, Alex. So I guess let's describe what your – let's start with your job title, and then we'll go – for the rest of the story, what does that mean?
Yeah, so my official title with the Mat-Su Borough is Development Services Manager.
Okay.
And what that means is that I manage code compliance and permitting for the borough. And that includes right-of-way permitting. We have three code compliance officers, and then all the driveway permits, flood permits, all the different variety of permits that the borough administers.
Right. We'll pause for a moment as the Palmer whistle. I wonder if they ever got a permit for that. Here we go. Here's this sound that goes outside the city limits into the borough, but no one seems to complain, so I guess it's all right. So when we talk about code compliance and all the rest, how many people, when you say you manage it, you must have other people that are participating in this process?
Yeah, so we have three co-compliance officers, two current planners who handle the larger conditional use permit type permits. Then we have two permit techs who handle the kind of administerial permits where there's a high volume but low review, basically.
Okay.
That includes driveway permits and flood permits and things like that. And then we have administrative support.
Okay.
And then a couple of temps that come and go for different various activities, and then we have the right-of-way coordinator who manages all the right-of-way activities, including the complaints and the permits, and then he has three temps as well.
So this sounds like, as I think about it, to be a very both complicated and complex and sometimes difficult situation. Part of my understanding is that over the years, there's been a discussion about a couple of things associated with permits. One, if you have a permit, let me get start there. That's the interesting place. If you have a permit requirement,
yeah,
and somebody, it's a little bit like the tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, what goes on. So if you have a need for a permit, and yet somebody fails to get it, is this complaint driven, or do you have permit police, or what happens?
Well, it is primarily complaint driven. We have three co-compliance officers that cover the entire borough. Mm-hmm. Certainly there is some activity that goes out there that should have permits that doesn't.
Right.
When somebody does that, they're making a business decision, calculating the risk, and a lot of times they can be stopped midstream, which ends up being a lot more expensive than if they just walked in to get a permit.
Sure.
We try to be, you know, we're very much customer oriented. When people come in for a permit, we try to make the experience as pleasurable as possible, right, as easy as possible, while still protecting the surrounding properties and the public as a whole. So I think more and more people are catching on to that, realizing that it's just easier to get the permit, that everything works out better, and they can go about their business.
So I live and we operate the station within the limits of the city of Palmer. And so my experience is focused on that. And I'm going to try to take from this point and then extrapolate to the borough and see where we're going. So, for example, I have built a house in Palmer once. One time was enough. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very happy to have the city of Palmer's building inspector, because I made sure that I encouraged him to come on by and say hello and look at things, because I knew that eventually I would be looking to selling the house, et cetera, and I wanted, sure, and also going to live in it, and I was interested in having it be both safe and saleable. And as a result, I followed the guidelines, and they were pretty clear, and that worked out. And more recently here in our studio, we reached out and we got a plan. We got a building permit from the city of Palmer. We also approached the fire marshal and got that. And even got a sign permit, a separate permit to put our sign up, which was necessary here in the city. And I didn't find any of it onerous. I found it to be helpful to validate that what we're doing made sense and it wasn't going to be a safety problem for people who were coming in here and all the rest of it. But this was, and this is my experience here.
So outside of the cities, we're not there yet. We do not have a residential code that we've that adopted, unless you're building larger than a fourplex.
Okay.
Basically, then it requires fire review. The state fire marshal office covers a lot of it, but within much of the core area, the borough does actually review for fire code. But if you're building a single family home, you're not in a flood zone. Really, there's no building permits or inspections like that required. Of course, if you're going through a financial institution, they're going to want to see things like that. But if you're building out of pocket, we really do not have any regulations or oversight on how you build your home.
Okay, so that's the structure of the home itself, and that which is something that very often would involve people. The next big category, and I've noticed that it's come up from time to time at borough assembly meetings, has to do with roads. I mean, if you build a house someplace, there's the question of, do you have a pioneer trace that gets you there, or do you have a real road and all the rest of it? So how do you fit into the road permitting game?
Yeah, so we do require a permit for any development within a public use easement that's owned by the borough. We don't manage the public use easements within the state. But we do manage also, if you're going to build a road down a section line easement, the state has deferred that authority to us, and we do permit that. And then any access that you make onto a right-of-way for your driveway, kind of a single point, we call that a driveway permit. We do require that for any access onto a borough public right-of-way. And we make sure that you have proper grade, proper line of sight, that your drainage is not going to affect your neighbors and block up the road. Snow storage, we make sure that maintenance costs stay down as a result of what you're doing within the right-of-way.
Okay.
So, and then as far as, there are specific standards for, as far as the classification of road that you're going to build. If you're building a minor collector, it's going to have a different standard than if you're building a, some pioneer road way out on the periphery. And
I would also expect, because back in my hometown some time ago, someone built a very large complex of homes but neglected to properly permit, et cetera, and there was no way that fire apparatus was going to go up. It would have to be on a hillside up into there, and it essentially remained unoccupied because there was no...
Yeah.
And I suspect that that's another aspect of this. Because I've heard these discussions occasionally where fire apparatus has difficulty getting to a place because the road is not adequate.
Yeah, so that's one of the most difficult situations. For instance, we have a multifamily development permit. Anytime you're developing over a certain threshold of units on one property, it requires a multifamily development permit. And the problem is, if you build first and get your permit later, you can end up in quite a conundrum, because we have certain standards that you have to meet. And if you already built in a way that doesn't meet those standards, we're going down a tough road. Whereas if you go in the first place and get your permit, it's going to be a fairly easy process, and everything can work out much better.
Okay, and I saw recently a discussion in the media about water that involved DEC and another body, et cetera. This is a fairly large development, dense development, and a community water system instead of a septic arrangement, and hoping sometime in the future, maybe if the city of Palmer continues to expand its system, that it will hook up. Did you have any role in that? Because I know the state was involved particularly.
Yeah, they did come in and apply for a multifamily development permit. Mm-hmm. As far as water issues, wells and septic, things like that, we do defer to the state, DEC. Okay. We, as part of the permit, we have them kind of check in on that stuff, make sure that they have their permits. Water rights is not one of the things that we actually require them to show proof of before they get our permit. So they were legally permitted through the borough.
But now they have a problem, because they have a problem.
Well, there's different layers. Anytime you're doing a big development like that, you're going to have different layers of regulations that the developer needs to make sure that they're going to all the right agencies and making sure they get all the proper permits. And
so we've been talking about categories kind of a permits at the present time, but one of the other things that I'm reminded is the borough is big. The city of Palmer is kind of has different areas. There's a few, you know, you have the edges and the central part and so on, but the borough is just immense, and you have entities such as community councils, and you have areas that are roughly unincorporated or seem to be open, Wild West type of situations, et cetera. How does the permitting systems accommodate for this wild range of differences?
Yeah, so, you know, you know, we do not have your typical type of zoning throughout the entire borough. What we do instead is we have, I guess, what you'd call blanket zoning. We have, over the entire borough, outside of the cities, we have certain requirements. If you're doing some use that affects your neighbors, you know, that the impacts of your use is going to go beyond your property line, then it requires review, public comment, and adjudication. There are sections within the borough where communities have gotten together and said, hey, we want our own specific regulations where we have, zoning. We have industrial areas and commercial areas and different areas where different uses are acceptable. Talkeetna would be a good example of that. Meadow Lakes just had a recent effort to do it, and it didn't work out for now, at least. But certainly, different areas within the borough have different specific regulations that have their own permitting requirements, different allowed uses in different areas. So,
because I know when we were originally some years ago constructing our transmission site in Sutton, for example, we made sure we contacted the Sutton Community Council and pointed out that our tower was not going to be tall. It was going to be a certain size, et cetera, and got support from them for putting it amongst some trees where it's basically invisible.
Sure.
In an area. One of the things that I guess comes up very often and is the comparison between, you know, we've just done a little bit of that by talking about, say, the city of Palmer and the borough, and of course the other two cities, Wasilla and Houston. But how does the permitting process in the borough here compare to other, maybe if you have some knowledge of other regions of Alaska? You know, obviously we've got the big city of Anchorage. And I know that when we talk about big, it means that I have two sons that built houses, one on the hillside and one down in Girdwood. And the requirements in those two places were significantly different because the conditions, wind, et cetera, are significantly different. What's your sense of how we compare around to other places?
Yeah. So, I think we, obviously within the cities, any place that is more metropolis, they're going to have stricter regulations and more regulations. And that's because the built environment is what defines a city, basically.
Right.
Whereas the borough is kind of this vast, open, a lot of forest. You have mountains in the distance. And, we are not far off from other boroughs out there, Kenai Peninsula Borough or Fairbanks North Star Borough. I think that we have very similar level of regulations compared to those.
Okay. Now, there are some special cases. For example, recently, there was the fascinating discussion, I thought, dealing with power plants.
Yeah.
And permitting for power plants. And I know right now it's possible. See, I'm in the business. I have 9 solar panels on our house, so I'm officially called a co-generator.
Okay.
And I pour power into both our home and MEA's grid.
Yeah.
But it's a 2.5 kilowatt hour thing, so it's not huge.
Below the threshold.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. But you have some permitting changes that have occurred recently dealing with power plants.
Indeed.
What's that all about?
Yeah. So several years back, before I was around, the borough decided to adopt power plant regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So they set it at 100 megawatts, I think.
Megawatts,
very
right.
Large,
yeah.
And it was a very rigorous process if you wanted to locate a power plant within the borough. And it was recognized recently by the assembly that it was essentially prohibitive for anything over 100 megawatts. And so they formed a group to look at the regulations, see if they're necessary at all, and then if they found that they were necessary, to go ahead and revise them as needed. And the group met, I think it took somewhere between 1 and 2 years, and revised the regulations to make it really fit better with the rest of borough code. It's a sort of a standard land use review, just like other conditional use permit processes, where you're looking at light, noise, traffic, dust, anything like that would affect the neighbors. And I think lowered it down to 50 megawatts, and then just made it fit better with all the other conditional use permits that we have.
Okay. Now, you've used the term throughout our discussion here, conditional use permit. Yeah. For those listeners who might not be followers of this whole permitting game, what's a conditional use permit?
Yeah, okay. So a conditional use permit is a permit which has several components to it. It has notification, it has public comments, the Planning Commission holds a hearing where the public can come speak to the issue, and then the Planning Commission acts sort of as a judge. It's considered a quasi-judicial process where their decision, they can say yes or no, and then also if they say yes, they can impose conditions, and that's where the word conditional comes from. And typically there are conditions that will, for instance, limit the hours of operation of a particular development, or just put conditions that would protect the neighbors. And usually those are based on the concerns that are raised by the property, by the neighbors in the process.
Okay. And the conditional use permit requirements vary a bit, or it's not a cut and dried kind of thing, in my understanding.
Yeah, that's correct. We have different processes for different types of uses. Gravel extraction operation is going to have a different impact than a tower, for instance. Okay. They're both going to affect their neighbors in one way or the other, but they're so vastly different from each other that we have different rules for each different type of use. So all conditional uses are kind of the same, but they're all kind of different as well.
Okay. Well, let's look at an interesting case example. As you were talking, it popped into my head. Of course, the new power plant that MEA built in Eklutna starts out in Anchorage. And it's operating now. And the lines, I've driven along and looked at them. They run through a part of Anchorage, and then they cross over the river, and they're in the borough.
Correct.
And then they head toward Wasilla, and there's some negotiation going along with Wasilla about their process, their planning commission effort, and so on, to make this whole thing happen. So When that whole line thing went on, there's at least three different entities that had to do some permitting. How did the borough's part of that work as compared to, say, Anchorage, or now what's happening in Wasilla?
Yeah, so because they located the power plant outside of the boundary of the borough, we did not regulate the power plant itself.
Sure.
As the transmission line came through the borough, we do have it's a fairly simple process. You basically have to hold a couple of meetings explaining what you're going to do, and then they have to let us know that they did that and show proof that they did that.
Okay.
There's really no review process. There's no standards by which they have to meet. They just have to reach out to the community and say, here's what we're doing. And they certainly did do that. Of course, when they got into the city of Wasilla, they had different rules, which I think they're more strict than ours, and so that's where that all started.
Okay, good. I think that's a nice quick summary.
Yeah.
So you've done a good job, in my opinion, of talking about some things that are going on and how permitting works. One of the interesting things that's happening in the world is technology is all around and developing different ways. How would you say technology is impacting the use of, whether it's the internet or distance-delivered services or the ability to connect in and get permits, et cetera? How's that affecting your whole operation?
Yeah, so in many ways, technology has been really, really helpful for us. We're still recovering from the 80s and 90s as far as our records management. Okay. And, we're kind of going in the wintertime where we have less permits coming in. We have been working diligently to get all of our paper records digitized, mm-hmm. get it out of the borough so that that building doesn't collapse, for instance. You know, there's a lot of records there.
Sure.
And it's been difficult to retrieve old records, which come in handy a lot of times.
Right.
So as far as that goes, technology has been really helpful for us, providing better customer service so we can be more responsive and more timely. In another way that sometime in the near future, we are working towards a project that would allow for online permitting.
Right.
Where somebody up in Cashwitna area mm-hmm. can apply for a permit without having to leave their home. Mm-hmm. That would be, I think, leaps and bounds ahead of where we are now, but we are actually really close. We have some funding that has been obtained that we can mm-hmm. actually work towards that. So I'd imagine within the next 2 years, you can expect online permitting as well as business licenses.
So right now, do you have to come in to do this, or can it be done by snail mail or something?
So yeah, somebody could fill out an application. They could print it out. They can mm-hmm. get online, print it out, and then send the application and a check through the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the times when people apply for a permit that way, we're going to find that it's incomplete upon our first review. And so then we're back. Hopefully the person has email so that we can correspond that way. Otherwise, if we're just using the mail, it can be a very lengthy process.
Okay. Well, I could see we're moving into this ability to do what, I mean, everything from the permanent fund dividend registration. I mean, that's like... I think this year it took me about a minute because I've used it in the past. And I would think that having, if you've got information in there and you can enter it and then correspond and also use the checking elements. You know, we just did our income taxes online, for example. I mean, it's like, oh.
That's where it's all going. Yeah. And honestly, our biggest... You know, just getting an online permitting system is not the hard part. Our biggest sort of bottleneck has been the credit card, processing of credit cards.
Yes.
That's been the very difficult thing. We have, you know, pools, ice rinks, the landfill, all these different satellite, you know, borough, functions where credit cards are accepted. And we're trying to get a consolidated process so that we can kind of all use the same process to accept credit cards, would be it online or at point of sale. And that's the hurdle we're trying to get over. And then once we have that all in place, the rest will follow very easily.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, we've just had, and I talked a little bit earlier today about the Primera announcement of some hacking into their secure system, medical system. And it's a constant concern that this information, whatever information you provide, is secure and isn't. You make available that information that should be made available, but not other things.
Yeah. So the good news is, with the permitting process, everything is available to the public.
That's helpful.
Yes.
So, Alex, one last question before we finish up here. You've been involved with this thing now for a number of years. What would you say has been the biggest change over time? From when you started looking at these things, whatever position you then held onto your present position, what's the most significant change in this whole permitting thing?
Yeah, well, I think when I first started, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago now, all of our processes were not streamlined at all, mm-hmm. I would say. They were there was redundant work that being done. It wasn't done in the most efficient manner. And I've been very fortunate that I've had great people that work for me who are process hounds. They'll constantly look for processes that are inefficient, and they'll say, hey, let's fix this. And I say, let's do it. And then also our IT department has really done a lot to improve technology that allows us, it gives us the tools to actually also make more process improvements. So we are... We're staying just as busy, but we're working much more efficiently, and we're actually able to process a lot more permits than we used to. We've sort of had tried to have a campaign to say, hey, come get your permits. Flood permits, we used to hardly process any, maybe 10 a year at the max.
Oh, really?
Now we're processing dozens a year, which is great. People are building their houses correctly before they actually build
Right.
So
sure.
They're not in some conundrum, right?
Right. Yeah.
One conundrum that could result would be that your basement's full of water. But so we're processing a lot more permits. We're doing it much more efficiently, and we're providing the best customer service we can, so that people, whether they, permits can be painful, mm-hmm. but we're trying to make it as good of an experience as possible.
Well, I appreciate your coming in today, because I think you've added you've shined some more light on a process which is pretty transparent to begin with, and I certainly appreciate it. And I've been in many assembly meetings. I've watched questions come up, and I've been impressed. I think you, over the years, have been able to step forward and answer specifically questions. If there wasn't an answer, you can get it, and all the rest. And that's a good thing. So, thank you for coming in today, Alex Strawn. I hope listeners have learned a bit more about permitting, why it is and how it's working, and particularly where it's going, because it sounds as if it's going to be improving here as time moves on.